Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Sanhedrin Daf Samach Tes. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. As we look at the upper part of Daf Samach Tes Omid Aleph, we will notice 4 lines from the top, a triangle with the expression Eisvei contained therein. The structural note that we provide in our marked Gemaras that you will find in the margin indicates Mivneh, the structure, and a triangle is featured. Kushyos al Rabo. This represents a series of questions on Rabo. Now, Rabo was seen on the previous page, the bottom of Samach Chesomid Beis. Rabo maintained Koton Enoi Moilid, that a minor is not capable of impregnating a woman. So we will see a series of questions, our note goes on to say, Mimakuros, from sources, Demashma Shekoton Moilid, that a koton is capable, a minor is capable of impregnating a woman. The first question, and before we go on, just scan down the page, and you'll notice a triangle with a 1 in the space to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text between the Gemara and the Rashi, and a few lines later, a number 2 with a length marker there, a dashed vertical line indicating the length of the question. The first question is based on the topic known as Shifcha Harufa. That is a situation where a man reserves a maidservant, a shivcha kanainis, for his slave, for his eved. In that case, it is forbidden for another man to have relations with her. And if there are relations, so she is to suffer a penalty, a punishment. Who is prohibited from having relations with her? So we will see that in the source. Eisvei Abaye. Abaye raises an objection to Rabo. Remember, Rabo said that he maintained that a koton, a minor, is incapable of procreating. Let us see what this source says. The posuk says, Ish. This is a reference to the man who has, and Rashi quotes the posuk, and you can see that to the immediate side of the Gemara, where Rashi says, V'ish ki ishkav es isho shichvas zera. So the posuk, as we said, uses the word ish, ainli elo ish, I would only know a full-fledged adult from the word ish. Ben teisha shonim v'yom echod shiroi l'biyo minayin. From where do I know that it is prohibited for the shifcha haruf, for the maidservant, to conduct intimacy, relations with a 9-year-old and 1-day son, a boy, that he is fit for intimacy? That's shiroi l'biyo. Talmud Lomar, ve'ish, the expression vav with the vav added to it, ve'ish, would include the minor. So what do we see from here? That a minor is also in the same category as an adult. Amar le, Rabba would answer, yesh loy ve'eno moilid. A minor has in him zera, semen, however, it is not capable of procreating. The ability of the zera to impregnate, that will take place only after achieving adulthood, 13. And this is parallel to ketivua shelo hivya shlish domi. His zera is like the seed of grains, where if a grain is planted and develops, but only it grows to less than a third of its full development, those grains, even though they're visible, if one were to plant them, they will not sprout, they will not grow into something else. And that is the parallel to the human being's zera before adulthood. The Bei Chizkiya Tana, the Yeshiva of Chizkiya, provides the following Tanaic source. The Pasuk says, V'chi Yozid Ish. This Pasuk, though, is referring to a different topic. It describes the act of murder. And it says, instead of using the word v'chi yarshia ish, when a man schemes to do evil, it uses the word yazid ish to refer to the same thing. But why does the Torah change the word from yarshia, a scheming evil, to the word yazid? So the Torah of the Beit Chizkiya points out, ish meizid umazria, v'ein koton meizid umazria, that an ish, an adult, meizid umazria, which connotes that his zera, his semen, is capable of procreating, of causing something to become, we could say, like cooked and ripened, in other words, produce results. And the koton, though, is not meizid umazria. Though he might have zera, it's not capable of being mezid. It's not capable of making something ready, in our case, to impregnate. Amalei Rav Mordechai l'Rav Ashi, my mashma d'hai mezid lishna d'bishuli, who? From where does one know that the word mezid means a lushan of bishul? The term bishul is often used in the context of cooking or ripening. For our purposes, we can explain the Gemara. From where do we know that the lashon of mezid is associated with cooking or bringing something to become ready? Dichtiv, the pasuk says, "Vayozed Yankiv nozid." In the story where Yankiv meets up with Esav, and he's cooking up a dish, oftentimes referred to as a bowl of lentils, the idea in this pasuk is he's cooking something up. The word vayozed, same shoresh, same root as the word mezid, to cook something up, to make it, bring it to a point where it is ready to eat, or ripened in the case of fruits. And in the case of the zera, it means it becomes, it's capable of impregnating a woman, resulting in an offspring. The Gemara once again goes back to the main topic and asks, is it really so that a minor does not cause procreation, does not impregnate? We have a long question here. We've instead of using the standard kuf marking, we've simply turned it number 2, but we already explained that we're in a question mode by virtue of the triangles you see here. This is a long question, as is indicated by the extended dashed line, the vertical line between the Gemara and the Rashi. We've also included another marking here, the double underline with dots in it, another series marker. These are stages in order to understand what the Tana de Bei Yishmoel is going to be teaching us. So we've done this marking to the expressions Ilemo and Elo Lav, and then Le'olam, three stages in trying to understand this. The first two stages form the question. The Gemara asks, Vahana Vahatana Debei Rabbi Shmuel, the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel teaches the following source. This is a quote from the posuk of Ben Sorer Mora. The posuk says, V'chi ye le'ish ben. So the Tana Debei Rabbi Shmuel says, Ben velo av, that who is subject to becoming a Ben Sorer Mora, someone who is classified as a ben, but not a case where he is a father. Hechi domi. What are the circumstances? I lemo di aber bosor da isi shte cyrus v'oilid mekami de lokif zokon. If you're going to describe a situation where the individual impregnated a woman after he brought forth two cyrus, namely, the pasuk is describing an adult. He brought the two hairs indicating adulthood, two hairs that appear on the lower part of the body, the pubic hairs, and she bore a child before there was a preponderance of hairs. The lakif zokon is the stage we saw in a previous Gemara where the hairs grow to a point where they surround the male organ. Well, mi iko sheus kulehai, is there enough time in that span between the time of the initial emergence of the two hairs and prior to the surrounding of the hairs to actually impregnate and produce an offspring? The ha oma rav kuspadoi kol yomav shel ben soro more eno elo gimel chadashim bilvad. The entire length of time during which an individual could become could be condemned as a ben sora mora is a 3-month period, which is illustrated by what we just described, the appearance, the emergence of two hairs, and the subsequent surrounding of the gid, of the organ. That being a 3-month period, there is not enough time to impregnate and cause the birth of a child. Elolav, so what is the Tana Debei Rabbi Shmuel describing? Diaber Mekami Delaisi Shtei Cyrus, where there was impregnation before the emergence of the two hairs. Let us use an example here. Let us say 6 months before the emergence of the two hairs, there was impregnation. And we've dashed, underlined this, because this is the main point for our discussion. The Oilid, and she bore the child, Mekami Delakif Zokon, before that took place, before Hakofas Zokon. And you see from this description, Ushmamino Koton Moilid. We see from this that a koton, a minor, is capable of impregnating. That would be a kasha on rabo. So the Gemara says, loy, that's not the situation that the Tana Devei Rabbi Shmuel is coming to exclude, but rather, le'olam di'aber bosor, the icy shtei saras. The Pasuk is describing a case where he impregnates after the emergence of the two hairs. That point showing us like Rabo. In other words, before the emergence of the two Cyrus, there would be no impregnation, because Koton Eino Molid. So the Pasuk is describing a case where he impregnates after the two Cyrus. The Oilid Bosor the Akif Zokon. And the birth of the child is after the Hakofas Zokon. In other words, enough time will emerge for impregnation and gestation for the development of a child, of an embryo, and hence an offspring. Udokokashio de Rebbe Kruspedoi. And then you'll ask, well, what about that which Rebbe Kruspedoi taught? And in order to appreciate this point in the Gemara, let us go to the Rashi. A few lines down from here, in the narrow lines, Rashi says, Loi, li'olam di'aber bosor da'aisi shtei cyrus v'chulei, etc. The Pasuk is describing a case where impregnation was after the first two hairs emerged. V'hai de'ko'oma Rabbi Shmuel ben v'loi av, and that which Rabbi Shmuel taught, that the Torah is saying, a ben becomes a ben sor mora and not a father. Who is being excluded? Loi kishi yoldosoi imoi kvar livnoi komemoet. The Torah is not coming to exclude a situation where an individual already bore a son literally, because where an individual bore a son literally, the belav hochi miftar mi din ben soro mora. Anyway, such a person would be excluded from ben sora mora. Such a person, namely, who impregnated a woman after the emergence of two hairs and literally had a child from that impregnation, he could not become a ben sora mora o begimul chadoshim. He's excluded because there's a passage of either 3 months, oi ba'akof azokan, or there was a surrounding of the organ already that took place prior. And at either one of those points in time, the person is excluded from being a ben sora mora. So what do I need the teaching of Rabbi Yishmael for? Let us continue now in the Gemara. Ki osa Ravdimi Omar. Ravdimi's role is to explain what is the din of Rabbi Yishmael coming to teach us. So he says, Amri b'marova, ben v'lo haroi l'kroisoi av. Who becomes a ben sora mora? Someone who is classified as a ben, and not someone who is fit to be described as an upcoming father. What does that mean, an upcoming father? That is a reference to a person that impregnated a woman and 3 months passed since he produced the two hairs. What's the significance of the passage of 3 months? At that point, the woman becomes noticeable as being pregnant and carrying an offspring. So at the point that the woman is noticed as being pregnant, we can say, oh, that the one who impregnated her is an upcoming father. He's a father-to-be. Such an individual is excluded from becoming a ben sora or more. Let us take a look at the Rashi on this point as well. The lower part of the narrow lines, Elokios Ravdimi, Pirsha, Lidetona, the Bey Rabbi Shmuel, his role in the Gemara is to explain the Tana Bey Bishmuel, the Osel Ashminon, that is coming to tell us, hi, the Rebbe Kruspadoi, that which Rebbe Kruspadoi said above in the Gemara, where he said that the length of time of a Ben So Mora, the time period in which a person is capable of becoming a Ben So Mora, is a mere 3 months. When is that period? La'achar Shehevi Shte Cyros, 3 months after the emergence of the two hairs, he is no longer possible. It is no longer possible for him to become classified as a ben sora or a hachi ka'amar. And thusly, the Tana de Bei Rabbi Shmuel means to say ben. The Torah uses that word v'lo harui liois av, and not someone who is capable of becoming classified as a father. V'hainu la'achar shloisha chadoshim achar shehevi cyros. That happens at a point that 3 months passed since he brought forth the hairs. What is significant about that time? Sheroi liyos ha'ubor niker. It's at that point that the embryo becomes visible. Imhoya bo al ho'isha, if a person had relations with a woman, mishehevi shte cyros, after the point he brought forth his two hairs, v'hi misaber, she would become pregnant, and as we said, at the 3 month period, it would become noticeable that she is in fact pregnant. So Rabbi Kruspadoi's halacha is applied, as we just mentioned, that at a point that there is the possibility of noticing her pregnancy, he is no longer capable of becoming a ben sora more. The Gemara now continues, focusing on Rav Kruspadoi. Gufa, Amar Rav Kruspadoi, Amar Rav Shabtai. Kol Yomov Shel Ben Sor More, the entire length of time that someone could become classified as a Ben Sor More, Einon Elo Gimul Chadoshim Bilvod. It's only during a 3 month period of time. The Gemara asks, what do you mean, only during a 3 month period of time? V'ho anan t'nan mishe yovi shte cyrus v'ad shiyakiv zokan. The Mishnah teaches, from the time that he produces the two hairs until they surround his zokan hatachton, the lower part of the body, until there is a surrounding, that's the time in which he can become a ben so mora. But not 3 months. The Gemara answers, both teachings have a role here. Aleph, Hekif Zokon, if a person achieved Hakofa Zokon, this preponderance of hairs whereby they surround the organ, Afagav de lo molo gimul chadoshim, even if 3 months have not been completed, namely, he produced the hairs rather quickly. Even if 3 months have not passed, he is no longer capable of becoming a ben so more. Bayes, another scenario. Molu gimul chadoshim afagav de lo hekif. If 3 months passed and the hairs have not surrounded the organ, he too will be excluded from becoming a ben so more by virtue of the fact that 3 months passed. And we mentioned before that the 3 months was derived from the pasuk insofar that it represents a time period in which a woman could become recognized as being pregnant if she was impregnated. Before going ahead in the Gemara, let us glance at our topic heading, the Nosei. Dino Shel Rav Kruspadoi, Kol Yomov Shel Ben So Mora equals Gimel Chadoshim. The entire time period during which someone could become a ben somer is 3 months. She'elah. The Gemara will raise a question. Ha'im yesh lahasik mi Rabbi Kruspadoi. Should we conclude from what he says, de'i yoyledes? Once again, the yoyledes lezayin ein ubra niker leshlish yomeha. Should we conclude from Rav Kruspadoi that if a woman gives birth after 7 months, and there are cases like that where after instead of 9 months, which is a standard amount of time for a human pregnancy, she bears a child after seven months. Should we conclude, Ein Ubra Niker Lishlish Yomeha, that her offspring, her embryo, would not create recognition of her pregnancy after a third of her gestation period, which is 2 1/3 months? This calculation is based on what we said before, that after 3 months in a 9 month pregnancy, the vlad, the offspring, becomes recognizable. Should we conclude from this discussion, however, that a 7 month pregnancy is not recognizable after a third of its time, namely 2 1/3 months, the imhoya niker ubra bishlish heryona, if it were so that a 7 month birth is recognizable after 2 1/3 months, we could then say, Hare hu roi lios av, he is a father, he could be referred to as a father in potential, but pochos migimul chadoshim, with less than the passage of 3 months. The ain lechayvoy keben so mora biyoser me 2 1/3 chodesh. And therefore, we should not be able to condemn someone as a ben so mora if 2 1/3 months passed. Let us now turn to the Gemara. Gufo, Omar Rav Kus Bedoy, Omar Rav Shaptai, Kol Yomov Shel Ben So Mora, Einon Elo Kimul Chadoshim Bilvad. We read this already, and we will read the question again. Vohanan Tanan Mishiyovi Shtei Cyrus Viad Shiyokiv Zokon. We said from two hairs until surrounding of the Zokon Atachdoin. So we answered already, we're simply rereading this. Hekiv Zokon Afagav Delo Molo Kimul Chadoshim, or Molo Gimul Chadoshim Afagav Delo Hekiv. We have a geometric symbol that we should have noted earlier, but it is found in our Mivneh heading on the side of the Gemara. You see this house form with the tip pointing up. This is arguing in favor of Eino Niker, that after 2 1/3 months, the Ubar is not recognizable. The offspring, the pregnancy, is not recognizable. With the house form pointing downwards, the Gemara will be maintaining Le'olam Niker. In general, it is Niker. A 7 month pregnancy would be recognizable after a mere 2 1/3 months. So the question is, then, why is it that we do not exempt someone from becoming a ben Soromura from the simple passage of 2 1/3 months? Elo anachnu hoyuchim achar horoiv. We come to our determinations based on the majority. For roiv, the majority, einon nikorois ad gimul chadoshim, are not recognizable until the passage of 3 months, meaning rove pregnancies are 9 months. We follow the principle of follow the majority. So we are saying over here, we follow the rove, lechayev misa. In order to condemn capital punishment, we base ourselves on the roiv. Therefore, since ben sora mora is in the realm of a capital offense, he can become a ben sora mora within a 3 month period, which is actually a longer period of time than 2 1/3 months. Ha'ora, let us, we want to point note something. Basof, at the end of this discussion, the Gemara is not going to want to conclude that in capital cases we will follow the rove, the majority, for the purposes of condemning. Turning back to the Gemara, with the first house form noticed, Yosef Rav Yankov min Nahar Pekoid, Kamei de Ravina. Rav Yankov from the area called Nahar Pekoid was seated in front of Ravina. V'Yosef v'Komar Mishmei de Ravuna Breda Rav Yeshua, and said in Ravuna's name the following conclusion: Shma mino Rabbi de Rabbi ni de Rabbi Krusbedoi. We learn from what Rabbi Krusbedoi said above. What did he say? He said, it's possible for someone to become a ben Soromora during a period of 3 months. So based on Rav Rokus Bedoy said in the name of Rav Shapsi, Yoiledes l'shiva ein ubra nikur l'shlish yomeha. We've dashed underlined this because this is the focus of the upcoming discussion. That a woman who bears a child after 7 months, a 7 month pregnancy and a birth, her ubar, her embryo, is not recognizable after 1/3 of her pregnancy. Shlish yomeha would be 2 1/3 months. If it were so that a pregnancy is recognizable in a 7 month pregnancy after 1/3 of her gestation period, why does Rav Kruspedoi talk about a 3 month period during which someone could become a ben soimore, betray vitil sosagya? With 2 1/3 months alone, that would be enough in order to conclude that with the passage thereof, with the passage of 2 1/3 months, he should become, he should enter the realm of exemption from becoming a ben soro moret. Amale, Ravino says, the oilam emaloch ubra nikur lishlishyomeha, that in general, pregnancies are noticeable after 1/3 of their full time. And that would mean a 7 month pregnancy would be recognizable after 2 1/3 months. And then you'll ask, well, then, why is it that a ben soro more is someone who can become that within during a 3 month period? We answer, why is it that we don't limit it to 2 1/3 months? The answer to that is zil boser ruba. We follow the majority. And therefore we extend, which is actually a stringency, we extend the amount of time during which he could be condemned. Zil basaruba means we follow the majority, and the majority of pregnancies are recognizable only after 3 months. Amrua kamei d'Rabbi Yeshua, d'Rav Huna, b'Rei of Yeshua. Amalei, Rabbi Rav Huna responds to what Ravina just said, Uvadine nefashos mi azlinon basaruba. And when it comes to capital cases, do we follow the rove? In this case, it's important to note that by following the rove, we are imposing a stringency. We're lengthening the amount of time during which a person could be condemned as a ben soro mora. But is that so that we follow the majority? Hatoira omra v'shaftu ha'eda v'hitzilu ha'eda. And from this pasuk, we learn that when the court judges, it tries to the hatzil is to save. Tries to find any way to get someone off the hook. Simply stated, in capital cases, we pursue the approach of leniency when possible. And here we have a possibility of declaring a leniency, namely by saying that we follow shlish yomel. We follow 1/3 of the time during that, with the passage of 1/3 of the time, and in the, which could at times be even 2 1/3 months, one could be recognized as a potential father. And we said that is grounds for exonerating or exempting someone from becoming a ben soro more. The at amris zil boseruba, as the Gemara goes on to say, and you say, let's follow the majority. And by following the majority, we're imposing a stringency by lengthening the amount of time during which he could become a ben soro more. Ahadrua kamei d'Ravina. The issue was thrown back to Ravina, as the ball goes into his court. Omarle, and Ravina says, Ubedine nefashos lo azlinon boseruba, and is that really so that in capital cases we don't follow the majority? V'hotanan, we have the following Mishnah. This is a point that we've learned earlier in this Masechta. This deals with two witnesses that come to tell us about an event. They may be describing a capital case. They are describing a murder, for example. One witness says that it took place on the 2nd of the month. Let us continue by reading this inside. Echad Oimer, one of the witnesses says, B'shnayim b'chodesh, that the event, the murder, took place on the second of the month. V'echad Omer b'shlishi, and the second witness says it took place on the third of the month. Eidusan kayemis, we maintain their testimony. You'll ask, how can we maintain their testimony? They're talking about two different days, hence they're contradictory. So the Mishnah says, no, they're not contradictory. They're talking about an event that took place on the same day. So why is there a discrepancy in their testimony? Shezeh yodea b'iburo shel chodesh, v'zeh eino yodea. Simply, one witness is aware that the previous month was lengthened by a day, and hence he would be saying the event took place on the second of the month, and the other witness is not aware that the previous month was lengthened. Hence, the new month started a day early, so he is the one testifying that it took place on the third of the current month. But they are, in effect, talking about the same day. Now, if it were so that we do not follow the majority, could it very well be that these two guys, these two witnesses, are being very exact in what they're saying? Namo, we could suggest, Hani, these two witnesses, Dafka Komisidi, they are being precise in their testimony, in the sense that when he says the second of the month, he knows what happened on the previous month, and the fellow who said the third also knows what took place on the previous month as far as the calendar considerations are concerned. And they are in fact contradicting each other. And if we could maintain that they are contradicting each other, we would thereby save the defendant. What do we see here? That we don't say that. Elo, lav, mishum damrinon, and rather it must be because we say zil bosaruba. We follow the majority of people. Veruba di inshi avdi de tob ibura di archa. Rove, the majority of people do err from time to time regarding knowledge of the extension of the previous month. And since rove people make mistakes in this realm, when he says that it took place the second of the month, he's talking about the same day that the other witness who said it took place during the third of the month. Bottom line is, we see that we maintain their testimony, even though the result is going to be a stringency, namely we're going to impose a death sentence on the defendant, even though there was room to say that maybe these two guys are people that did not make any mistakes regarding Ibur HaChodesh. Therefore, Ravina defends his position that we follow the majority, even if it results in a stringency in capital cases. Notice with our markings, we have another opinion that maintains this same opinion as Ravina, that we will follow the rove in Dine Nefashos. Omar Rabbi Yirmiyah Midifti Af Anan Amitanina. We have a Tanaic source that supports this idea that we follow the rove, we follow the majority, even if it results in capital punishment. The following source, it should be noted before we go on that we have a long point, and that's indicated by the nun nekuda, a point with a dashed vertical line that extends till the top of Samach Tes Amid Beis. The source opens up describing a girl who is 3 years and a day of age, and laws that apply to her with regard to her bia, her intimacy that's conducted with her. And we should just note beforehand that intimacy is a means of acquisition when it comes to marriage, that a person can become married through the performance of this act of bia. The source says, Bas shalosh shanim v'yom echad miskadeshes b'bia. She can become betrothed through an act of intimacy. And if she is conducts relations with her brother-in-law in the context of the Yibum situation, where her previous husband had left no children. Her brother-in-law has relations with her, thereby acquiring her as a Yavama. That's Kona. He acquires her. V'chayovin alel mishum eishes ish. And if some other man has relations with this Basha Lashonim V'yomechot after she was married by someone else, the relations that the outsider has with her would condemn him as being guilty of having relations with a married woman. Umetame es boyalo letame mishkov hatachtoin keelyoin, and relations with her will impose impurity, tuma, on he who conducted relations with her. And the level of impurity is described by the source, letame mishkov hatachton, that which he lies upon will have the din of elyon, will have the din of those things like blankets that rest upon a zav. We are not going to get into the details of that right now. We'll continue though in the source. Niseis l'kohen, if a bas shaloshonim v'yom echad had relations with a kohen and thereby became married to him, this is considered a full-fledged marriage with regard to her newly acquired rights for consuming the truma tithe. She's ocheles betruma. Bo oleo echad min hapsulim, posla min hakuna. If, let us say, someone who is unfit to marry into the Jewish people, for example, a kusi or a mamzer, they will render her unfit to the priesthood, to the kahuna. V'im bo oleo echad mikol harayas umuris b'torah, if one of the forbidden relatives conducts relations with her, with a three-year-old girl and a day, 3 years old and a day, Mumsin Oleha Vihiptura, they will be guilty of a capital offense and can be subject to the death penalty, but she, as the fact that she is a minor, she will be exempt from the death penalty. The Rashi at the bottom says Vihiptura Mneshi Ktana Veino Bas Oinshin. She's a minor and therefore not subject to death penalties. Kotoni Mia, we do see from this source, however, Chayoven Oleha Mishum Eishes Ish, that she can become categorized as a married woman, that when we say that someone will be guilty of having relations with an Eishes Ish, what does chayovin mean? That it becomes guilty, it sounds like guilty of death penalty. That's what Rashi says, kozalka daito chayovin miso komar ubemezit. The question, though, could be raised, v'amai, why would someone be condemned as having relations with her had she been married already? Who says that she's married? Could it not be that if this Bas Shalashonim V'yom Echad grows up and turns out to be an islandess woman? Islandess woman is a situation where there is a problem in a woman's physical development, and she doesn't develop or mature in the normal physiological way, whereby she becomes an islandess. This is a situation where a woman is, as we mentioned, does not mature in the normal way, and she doesn't become capable of procreating as she enters her adulthood. And when situations like that arise, when a person finds out that she is an islandess, we classify that, generally speaking, as a mekach tos, as a mistake in the original marriage agreement. If there be a mistake or mistaken circumstances in the original marriage agreement, she's not considered married retroactively. So why is it that with a ktana, Basha Lashon V'yom Echad, who is married to someone, and that girl would have relations with an outsider, why is it that we condemn the outsider as having been guilty of Eishes Ish, relations with a married woman? Is it not possible that as she ages and matures, she might turn out to be, though it's a very unusual case, but she might turn out to be an Eilinus. And in the case she turns out to be an Eilinus, retroactively she was never considered married, and hence one who has relations with her would not be guilty of having had relations with a married woman. And as the Gemara says, why, let's read the top line again, the Amai, why do we say that other people could be condemned based on having relations with her? Amo Eilinus he, could we not say that she may turn out to be an Eilinus? V'adaita d'hochi lo kodesh, and based on that, the original husband never would have married her, and we would call his marriage with her kedushe tois, and yet we don't say all of that. Elolav, rather, diamrinon, we do say, zil basaruba, we follow the majority. V'roiv noshim lav Eilinus ninhu, most women mature normally and do not turn out to be Eilinus women, and therefore we are able to condemn some outsider that had relations with her based on the prohibition of having relations with a married woman. And we don't, let us, we're repeating ourselves, but we'll say it again. And we don't factor in the minority possibility of her having never been married based on her developing into this unlikely Eilinus. That is the end of the long point. What do we see from here? We see from here, we follow the majority, and hence we've dashed, underlined this expression, we follow the majority when it comes, even when it comes to capital cases. The Gemara now embarks on a back and forth, and we're continuing with our markings. With the point facing up, we're going to try to argue that we do not follow the majority. Loi, my chayav aleha dekotani, what was meant by the source that says that one could be found guilty at the point that he has relations with this married three-year-old girl? It meant he's chayav a korban, a sacrifice, but we will not condemn him to death. The sacrifice is a situation where someone had relations in a shogeg fashion, in an unwitting fashion. The Gemara says, how can you say that explanation? V'ho mumsin al yodo kotoni. We've dashed, underlined the word mumsin means people are condemned to death as a result of relations with her. So the Gemara tries to answer, no, that's not talking about anybody from the outside, but rather bebo oleha aviha. That's a case where her father would have relations with her. Now his condemnation is not based on her having been married to another man, but the father's condemnation is based on the fact that he is a forbidden relative. Even if she were not married to someone else, he would be guilty. The Gemara asks, "V'ha imbo aleha echad mikol ha'arayas kotani?" The source doesn't refer to just father. It says any forbidden relatives or relationships will cause condemnation, including an outsider having relations with her being condemned based on Aishas Ish. And the fact that we're able to classify her as a married woman shows us that we are discounting that minority possibility of her turning into an Eilinus. The Gemara, though, says, the Gemara rejects this and says, Elo, hocho b'mayaskinon. The case featured in the source that the three-year-old girl could be could result in condemnation of someone else on the grounds of Aishas Ish as a married woman is where the one who married her, dekiblo iluya, he accepted upon himself the remote scenario of her turning out to be an Eilinus, and even so, he wants to remain her husband. So under those circumstances, the husband is a shuin, is a guarantee. He is guaranteed to be her husband, even in the event that the minority circumstance arises. However, if you don't have kibla ole, if you don't have a husband accepting upon himself that scenario, In fact, according to the Maskona of this Gemara, it seems that we would factor in the minority possibility of her turning out to be an eilonis, and if that be the case, she would retroactively not be considered married, and as a result of that faint possibility, we will not condemn to death some outsider that has relations with this girl. Because in Dine Nefoshos, we do not want to follow the majority where it would result in a stringency. Tonu Rabbanan. We notice in our markings a slash that appears before this. This indicates that we are now embarking on a new sugya, which represents a new train of thought, not related to that which was mentioned just before. Let us glance at the topic heading, the Nosei. We will be featuring here a Machloikis Tanoim, a Tanaic controversy between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, Im Bias Ben Shmoine Chadoshim Shmei Bia. Does the intimacy of an 8-year-old boy constitute halachic Bia or not? Hasheela. The question will be, Haim Nilmad Midorois Orishainim Shehalidu Beboni Shehulidu b'nei shmoina shonim. Are we going to learn from the earlier generations that bore children when they were 8 years old? Tanu Rabbanan. The source begins, Ha miseleles bivno koton v'he'ara ba, a mother that is conducting herself in an immoral way with her child, her minor aged child, and heraba, and experienced partial entrance. Beishamay omrim posla minakuna, that the bino koton is capable of rendering the mother unfit to ever marry into the kahuna. Generally speaking, a woman who has forbidden relations, without getting into details, that's why we preface our remarks by saying, generally speaking, a woman engaged in illicit relations or prohibited relations, we call them often involved with arayas, this will render her unfit to the kahuna. Beis Hillel, on the other hand, says that if she conducts this immoral behavior with her son, who is a katan, that does not render her unfit. Machshirin, they declare her as still being acceptable into the kahuna. Omer Rabbi Chiya Brei de Rabo Bar Nachmeni Omer Avchista V'Amri Lo. Another version of the names is Omer Avchista Omer Ziri. As far as this source is concerned, it made reference to a benal katan. There are several ages to consider in our discussion. So we've dashed underlined the expression hakol modim to contrast this with what we see 2 lines later, loy nechliku ella. We open up this discussion by saying that there are 2 points of agreement. The point that was featured in the source as a point of disagreement, that's only when we get to the third level. So hakol modim beben tisha chadoshonim v'yoyim echad should be also bia. Everyone will agree, even Beis Hillel will agree, that if a mother had relations with a 9-year-old son, that constitutes intimacy, halachic intimacy, and that would render her unfit to the kuna. A second category, pochos mi ben shmoina, everyone would agree, even Beis Shammai would agree, that if the relations she conducts are with her son under 8, she'ain bi also bia, that type of intimacy has no halachic outcome. Loi nechliku ela beben shmoina. Their controversy is focusing on a boy who is 8 years old. In other words, he's celebrated his 8th birthday and has not reached his 9th. He has not completed 9 years. He's between 8 and 9. The Beis Shammai Safri, Beis Shammai, who is stringent, who says she, the mother, becomes unacceceptable to the priesthood after this point, it holds Safri, Gamrinon Midoros Harishonim, we are going to learn from the early generations where they bore children at 8 years. That creating a standard showing us that the bia of a ben shmoina is considered bia. Ubeis Hillel Savri lo gamrinon midoros harishonim. We are not going to learn from the unusual capabilities of the earlier generations. That having been said, we've established that during earlier generations, fatherhood was achieved at 8 years old, or it could have been achieved at 8 years of age. That draws us into the next discussion, which will take us down to practically the bottom of the page. V'doros horishonim enolan de'olid. Where do we see the precedent for this, that the early generations produced children with fathers, became fathers at 8 years of age? Before we go further in the Gemara, let us take advantage of the marking system in this context. We featured here triangles, and you'll notice as you skim down the page, the triangles appear in two directions. So we have the Mivne heading to the in the margin, with the triangle point facing up, Nisayon lohifiach shalidu b'nei shmoina, attempts to show that fatherhood could be achieved at age 8. With the triangle flipped over, namely pointing with the point facing downwards, dechia, these will be rejections of those attempts. If one scans the omid, one will also notice in the space to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, some numbering triangles with numbers in them, 1, 2, and 3. As you scan down, this means that we have three attempts to show fatherhood achieved at age 9. So where do we see this, possibly? The first attempt will be from Achitofel and his granddaughter, Bas Sheva, who was the mother of his great-grandson, was the mother of Shlomo. Shlomo HaMelech being the great-grandson of Achitofel. We are going to try to show that Achitofel was a rather young great-grandfather, and as we factor in the different generations, it will turn out, at first glance, that fatherhood was being achieved at age 8. As we go on in the Gemara, though, you'll notice an inverted triangle with a Dilma word contained therein, which will represent a rejection. Before we go on in the Gemara, let's also note that this attempt number 1 is in effect a long attempt, as indicated by the length marker, the one that you find to the right-hand side of the Gemara text, followed by a vertical dashed line. All of these lines are part of the attempt. The Gemara says, "Ilema midichtiv." If you think that we can see fatherhood achieved at age 8 during the earlier generations from that which it says, "Haloi zois bas sheva bas eliom eishes urio hachiti." We see featured here the woman Bas Sheva and her father Eliom. Uksiv. Another pasuk establishes that Eliom was the son of Achitofel. Uksiv Eliom ben Achitofel Hagiloni. At this point, then, we've set up a grandfather-granddaughter setup, namely Achitofel, followed by Eliom, followed by Basheva. Uksiv, and it says in the context of the birth of Shlomo, Vayishlach biyad noson hanovi, vayikro es shmoi yididya. The prophet Noson mentioned that the name of the offspring, we know him as Shlomo, but he would be called Yedidya, Bavur Hashem, Uksiv. Continuing from that point in time, namely the birth of Shlomo, it says, Vayi l'shnosayim yomim, 2 years after the birth of Shlomo, Vayu goizizim l'avshalom, Uksiv, v'avshalom borach, Vayelech Kishura, Vayisham Sholoishanim. So from that point on, we see Avshalom after he killed Amnon. Not important for us to get into any details of the storyline at this point, but we see that after he murdered Amnon, Avshalom ran, Vayi Shom Sholoshanim. We're now at a point in time, if you just notice what we've underlined and added numbers, we are at a 5-year point in time from the birth of Shlomo, Uksiv, Vayeshev Avshalom Yushalayim, Shnosayim Yomim. That Avshalom dwelled in Yerushalayim 2 years, Ufnei HaMelech Lo Ra'ah. We're now at a 7-year mark from the birth of Shlomo. Uksiv vayimiketz arboim shana vayomer Avshalom el hamelech elcha no vashalem es nidri asher nodarti lashem bechevroin. Avshalom is now going to pay up a debt that he made to, that he promised to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Uksiv vachitofel ro'ah ki loy naaso atzasai. Achitofel saw that his counsel was not followed. Vayachvoish es hachamor, vayyokom vayelech el beisoi. He saddled up his donkey and went home. El iroi vayitzav el beiso vayechonek. This pasuk says that he eventually committed suicide. This is a reference to Achitofel. How old was Achitofel at this point in time? Uksiv anshe domim umirmo lo yechzu yemehem. The evil do not pass half of their lifespan. Vitanya, a Tanaic source points out, kol shnoisav shel doeg, the lifespan of Doeg himself was Einon Elo shloishim ve'arba. He lived to 34. V'shel Achitofel, we've dashed underline him because this is the main point of our discussion. Achitofel's life was Einon Elo shloishim ve'shalosh. He lived till 33. So, dying at age 33. How old was Shlomo HaMelech at this point? Shlomo, who wasn't yet king, but how old was boy Shlomo? He was 7 years old. How old was Achitofel at the point that Shlomo was born? So let's continue in the Gemara. Kamo Havyo Lehu, the Gemara at this point is reviewing the age of Achitofel, Talsin Uflas, he was 33 at the point of his death. Dal Sheva Dahave Shlomo. Subtract 7 years from this, which was the age of Shlomo at this point, as we saw before by adding up the ages referred to in the Psukim. Posh Lehu Esrim Vishis. There remains, after subtracting 7 from 33, you get to 26. That is how old Achitofel was at the point that Shlomo was born. Now, Achitofel, with regard to Shlomo, really was a fourth generation. In other words, between the birth of Shlomo and Achitofel, there had to have been 3 pregnancies. Dal Tarti Shani Litlosa Iburi, subtract 2 years, that would account for 3 pregnancies. This number is arrived at by doing the following. Assuming even the least number of, assuming 7-month pregnancies, plus another month, which is a period of time during which a woman is forbidden to her husband as a result of Dine Tuma, it would in effect be 3 times 8 months is 24 months, 2 years. How old were the people when they fathered their children, according to this? Ishtakach decholchad v'chad betamni oylid, that each father bore his son at age 8. What did we do? We said that Achitofel was 26 when Shlomo was born, but when did they act? And but the 26 also was an age at which 3 pregnancies had ensued. Between Achitofel and the birth of Shlomo, and we said the 3 pregnancies accounted for a total of 2 years of time, and we subtracted the 2 from the 26, we came out to 24, and 24 divided by the 3 generations between Achitofel and Shlomo, it turns out that each father was 8 years old. We've included on the side of our Gemara a chart to illustrate this. We note on the chart that Achitofel when he bore Eliam, Achitophel would have been 8 years and 8 months. When Eliam bore Bathsheba, we would add to the 8 years and 8 months another 8 years and 8 months. It would make Achitophel 17 years and 4 months. We would add to that another 8 years and 8 months. It would then make Achitophel 26 at the age, at the time Shlomo HaMelech was born. At this point, the Gemara is going to reject all of this. Before we go further, it's just noteworthy that we've double underlined the expression ishtakach, and this you'll see happening again in the Gemara. These are words that means it comes out that, namely they're words of conclusion, after which though the Gemara will reject it. So we've emphasized with a double underline and dots in it to bring out that particular attempted conclusion. The Gemara now goes on, Mimai, who says that what we've said is to be taken seriously? Dilma, Travayu, Betesha, Oilid. It could be that the fathers bore their children when they were 8 years, when they were 9 years old. Namely, Achitophel was 9 when he bore Eliam, and Eliam was 9 when he bore Bathsheba. Ubathsheba, Oilida Beshis, Mishum de Itza Bori. And as far as getting up to 26 years old for Achitophel, that's because Bathsheba, the granddaughter, bore when she was less than 8. Namely, she may have been 6 years old. And we know that women are, they mature more rapidly than men. So that the two men were 9 years each one, and she was 6. Teda deha havi lo valad mekora. And to prove this, that women mature earlier, is that even if you accept the 8-year-old construction that we mentioned before, namely she was 8 years old when she bore Shlomo, but she had a child before that from the storyline in the Tanakh. So we see that even under 8, she was already bearing a children, even according to our attempted approach. Therefore, we have license, or we have reason to think that from here you can't prove that men will be fathers, or could have been fathers during the Doros Rishonim necessarily from 8 years of age. Elamei Hocha, the Gemara continues with a second approach from the following. This will be a pasuk dealing with Avram Avinu. It says, Elamei Hocha, Ela Toldos Terach. Terach Hoylid Es Avram Es Nochor Ves Horon. Terach, the father of 3 men, Avram, Nochor, and Horon. The Avram Godol Mi Nochor Shona. Avram was older than Nochor by 1 year. Ve Nochor Godol Mi Horon Shona. And Nochor was older than Horon, the third son listed in the pasuk, by 1 year. Nimtza Avram Godol Shtei Shonim Mehoron. That would make Avram 2 years older than Horon. Uksiv. There's another pasuk that describes these men as taking wives. It says, Vayikach Avram v'Nochor lohem noshim. They married. And the Rashi continues the pasuk. He says that Shem Eishes Avram Sarai. This is not in the Gemara, but it's found in the Rashi. He says there that as the pasuk says, that Avram's wife was Sarai, v'shem Eishes Nochor Milka Bas Horon, and Nochor's wife's name was Milka, the daughter of Horon. Horon was Avi Milka v'Avi Yiska. Horon himself was the father of these two wives that Avram and Nochor took. He was the father of Milka and Yiska. From this we are to assume that Yiska is a co-name for Sara or Sarai. They are one and the same. Uviomar Rabbi Yitzchak, Yiska zu Sara. In our Gemara, as we continue reading it, we see that Rabbi Yitzchak says that Yiska in fact is Sara, the daughter of Horon. Veloma nikra shma Yiska. Why is Sara called by that name? Shesoche beruach hakodesh, that she basks in the divine spirit. The word soche, referring to her being covered in divine spirit. Vahainu dichtiv Kol Asher Toimer Eilecha Sarah Shema Bekolah. Later in the Torah, Avram is told by the Kodesh Baruch Hu, whatever Sarah says, listen to her, because she possessed Ruach HaKodesh. Dover Achir, another explanation of Yiska, Shehakol Sochin BeYofia, that everyone basked in her beauty. The Uksiv. We continue in the string of psukim, which eventually will lead us to the conclusion we're attempting to achieve. It says, Vayipoyu Avraham al ponav vayitzchok vayoymer beliboy. This pasuk is referring to the time that he was going to bear a son, and it says there in the Vechule, the continuation we've written in between the lines, Avram was joyful when he heard he would have a son. Halaben shana, halaben mea shana ivalei v'imsora habas tishim shana tele. Could it be that a 100-year-old man and a 90-year-old woman will bear a child together? What do we see from this pasuk? Kama koshish Avram misora. How much older was Avram than Sarah? Eser Shanim. He was 10 years older than Sarah. Avram, 10 years older than Sarah. V'koshish me'avua tartin shanin. And Avram was 2 years older than her father being Haran, as we saw above. If that be the case, if he was 10 years older than Sarah, and 2 years older than her father, how old was her father when he bore his daughter? Ishtakach, notice the double underline again with the dots in it. Our conclusion is ki olda Haran l'Sara, when Haran bore Sara, but tamni olida, we've dashed underline tamni being the main point, he bore her at age 8. The Gemara once again rejects this. Mimai dilmo Avram zuta di achva have. It could be that Avram was the youngest of the 3 sons of Terach. You'll then ask, so why was Avram's name mentioned first in that pasuk? And in order to find that pasuk, you'll notice in the space to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, we have an arrow meaning to find a parallel arrow, and you'll see that above, pointing to the line in which the pasuk of Terach's sons were featured. It could be that though Avram was mentioned first, he really was the youngest of the sons. So why was he mentioned first? V'derech chochmoson kochoshiv lehu. They're listed simply in the order of their wisdom, Avram being the wisest of them. But Haran being older. Haran being older, it could be that Haran, if that be the case, so we know that Avram was 10 years older than Sarah, and we know that Haran was, according to this rejection, that Haran was older than that. Well, that would then not enable us to conclude that fatherhood was achieved at 8. In this case, Haran being older than Avram, he was certainly over 10 years of age. At this point in the Gemara, we encounter a bracketed section. The length of this bracketed section is indicated by the length marker to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, the dashed dotted line. After the bracketed section, you'll notice Ella Menolan. From where do we know that there was birth or fatherhood at age 8? That will be dealt with after the bracketed section. This is also noted by the asterisk note found in the margin. Tochen Hasograim, this asterisk is found at the beginning of the bracketed section. In the margin it says, Tochen Hasograim, the contents of the bracketed section, Hoychocha will be proof, Shal Torah Roishemes Lefi Chochmoson Shal Ho'anoshim, that the Torah will list people in order of their wisdom, as opposed to chronological order. With all that having been said, there is no need to skip the bracketed section. We can read it straight through. The source of Derech Chochmoson that the Torah lists in order of wisdom will be from the Psukim dealing with Noach and his sons. Noach is listed as having 3 sons, and the list of the sons is Shem, Ham, and Yofes. Shem is listed first. We are going to show after pursuing a few lines of Gemara, it's not going to be obvious immediately, but after several lines of Gemara, the Gemara will have to conclude that even though shame is listed first, he is not the first in a chronological sense with regard to the sons of Noach. Let us now read this in the Gemara. Teda, let it be known, the Kachoshiv Lehu Derech Chochmason, that the Torah lists off in order of wisdom, Dichtiv, as it says, we've noted, just to make the expectation easier, that Iker in between the lines, we've written in Iker HaEchocha Mofia LeKamon, the main proof will appear later on. So let us continue with the psukim that the Gemara presents, and focusing on ages, and eventually come to this conclusion. Dichtiv, the pasuk says, Vayinoyach ben chomesh meois shana, Vayeled Noach es shem es chom v'es yofes. It tells us that Noach was 500 years old when he started having his sons, the sons listed here, and the first of them was Shem, followed by Cham and Yefes. Shem godol mecham shana. Shem was older than Cham by 1 year. V'cham godol miyefes shana. And Cham being older than Yefes by 1 year. Nimtza Shem godol miyefes shtei shanim. That would make Shem older than Yefes by 2 years. Uksiv v'noyach ben sheish meyos shana v'hamabul hoyo mayim al horetz. The flood appeared on the world when Noach was 600 years of age. It would appear then that Shem would be 100 years at the time of the Mabul. Uksiv, Ela todos Shem, Shem ben Me'as Shona, Vayoled es Arpachshad Shinosayim Achar Hamabul. This pasuk describes Shem as being 100 years old, 2 years after the Mabul, 2 years after the flood. Shem was 100 years old. But according to what we said a moment before, that's not the case. Ben Me'as Shana, we read in exclamation, what, he was 100 years old 2 years after the Mabul? Not true. Bar Me'as V'Tartin Shonin Havi. He was really 102 years after the Mabul. But nevertheless, the pasuk says he was only 100 years.